Welcome to episode 195 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Star Wars in the Shadow of Yavin by Brian Wood. And now, the cast begins.
I went to Andy's house yesterday.
BlizzCon.
Andy got the BlizzCon virtual ticket. So we watched a bunch of panels.
Yep. Did you watch the closing Metallica concert?
No, I have not watched that yet. Oh, I should meet this.
We watched the Looking for Group documentary, and we watched like the costume contest. We watched a bunch of Overwatch stuff.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Overwatch looks awesome.
Yeah.
It looks cool. I know it's probably not something I'll end up playing.
Yeah, it's probably something I will get and play for like a month when everybody else has gotten it and played it. But once my friends sort of get like burned out on it, then I'll just stop. Because like I can never do first-person shooters against other real people on the internet.
Yeah, I can't handle that.
It's never fun.
Yeah, I'm, like, really bad at FPS games, so I feel bad for the people who I'm supposed to be, like, playing with, like, on their team. But I'll probably play it. Like, yeah. I liked TF2, but I was, like, never that good at it, and people, like, had all the, like, cool secret gear you could get in that game, like, the items, and I just never compete with anybody, which is fine. I don't care.
Yeah, I've been spoiled on first-person shooters ever since the Counter-Strike days, because my friends in high school would just have awesome aim all the time, and I never was really good with aiming with a mouse. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm any better or at all with a joystick or a controller or anything. But, like, they would always, like, as soon as you pop out from a quarter, bam, headshot, you're dead. And the way I would try and make up for it was by using the one-shot kill rifle. And they would just give me endless shit for it. And I'm like, I still get half the kills you do. Who gives a crap? Like, you still murder the crap out of me. And it's just like, you couldn't win. It wasn't fun either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not so strong with FPSs, and it's just like, I mean, I'm okay with them, but I'm not great. And like, when you're super competitive in those and everyone's like, come on, and yeah, I can't do it.
Hey, David, guess what Mitch just sent me?
Did he resub?
He sent me a picture of his screen that says game subscription updated.
Nah. Anyways, we should probably record the podcast.
Probably.
Because yeah. we could probably do a podcast about WoW.
We could do a lot of podcasts about WoW. It would be really bad because Jen is the only high-level player between the three of us. All right, you guys ready?
Yep.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another forceful episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hello.
And this week we read Star Wars in the Shadow of Yavin by Brian Wood. This collects issues 1-6 from 2012 of the title just called Star Wars. So last week was The Star Wars. This is Star Wars, just Star Wars. They got a little bit confusing there at the very end. So what did you guys think about this one?
I liked it.
I want to read more. Like, it wasn't that it was the best comic I've ever read, but I want to find out who the traitor is. Like, I want to know.
Yeah, I really liked this comic a lot, because I think this nailed one of the things that I always really loved about Star Wars that I couldn't articulate it last week and why I didn't like it last week. But this has that big sense of, like, there's these entirely separate events happening in different corners of the galaxy that you can just feel are going to come together somehow. And, I mean, there's storytelling. Of course, it tells you that it's going to and all that kind of stuff. But, like, it just, there's that feeling of impending convergence that it's just great in here. Like, Han and Chewie come up, and it's like, okay, well, first you think they're just bringing up because they have to mention Han and Chewie and what they're doing. But then you're like, but they're actually doing something, and then Mon Mothma mentions them, and then there's Vader talking about Skywalker, and, like, it's all starting to go to a point in time where it's all going to collide together. And that feeling is awesome in this comic. That's great.
This was a well-organized comic. It felt like it was always driving to an end goal without rushing there. And, like, I just feel like, especially compared to last week, it was very well-paced.
Yeah. Yeah, last week was so rushed.
I feel like with the Star Wars one, they were trying to, like I think you mentioned, Andy, that they, I can say words. They were just, Dark Horse was like, fuck it, let's just do this cuckoo comic. And so I think they just tried to jam everything into 8 issues, you know. So there was just like they were trying to put as much stuff, like the whole comic was like a wink at Star Wars fans, you know, which isn't, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. It just is what it is. You know, I mostly enjoyed the comic last week, but yeah, I agree with you guys. This was certainly a much better comic book experience overall compared to the Star Wars.
So one of the things I really liked about this comic was that it felt more like a connected universe. Like, the offhanded things about Corellians and Alderaanians and not just Leia feeling the pressure of representing her world, but then, like, there's the male Alderaanian dude that she picks to be part of her flight, and, like, he calls her princess. And you get the feeling it's because she would be his ruler if Alderaan still existed. Like, he's still respecting that tradition, even though he doesn't have to anymore. And you get, like, the Corellians bantering back and forth when they're in the same squad together. Like, giving it, like, doing the never telling the odds bit.
Yeah, it's like, because that thing was like, it's like Han Solo's, one of his most recognizable one-liners from the Star Wars universe, right? And now it turns out it's like a Corellian thing. It's not necessarily a Han Solo thing, which is kind of cool, and it's cool in some respects, and maybe in others it kind of takes away from him a little bit, but there's so much Han Solo to go around. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, he's got enough one-liners. You can dole a couple out to the crowd.
Yeah,
but those little bits of like making it feel like you can just mention a thing offhandedly. You know, like the Kuat shipyards where they make the Star Destroyers. You can just mention that offhandedly, and it kind of adds to the depth of the universe. But what it really does is if you say that like the Star Destroyer is the pride of the shipyard, you know, because then that it doesn't just give the shipyard character, it gives character to the planet it's located at and the people associated with it, which comes in later on, even after that, when you're introduced to the representative who has to become a Moff.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, the Empire in movies is, for the most part, a faceless machine, right? The representatives of the main representative that or representatives that we encounter with in the movies is the stormtroopers, obviously Darth Vader, the Emperor, who we do get to see his face in Return of the Jedi, but even his face is cloaked, it's in the shadows of his hood, right?
Mm-hmm.
and it's just this military force. You know, we just see fleets of Star Destroyers, TIE Fighters, the two Death Stars. But in this comic, we kind of get to see the people who make the machine run. You know, because there's just people who are living their lives, and for a lot of them, being under Imperial rule probably doesn't have that much effect one way or another. They're just gonna do their jobs and move on and chug along in their life, and so it's cool that we kind of get a little bit of that in this comic, right? It's like that whole conversation that people always talk about, like the Death Star 2 was under construction still, so all the non-military people who are working on the project,
yeah, all the construction workers, mm-hmm. all the contractors, probably. Yeah.
And so it's kind of interesting because now we get to see who those contractors are a little bit. You know, the woman that you mentioned, Andy, who becomes acting Moff, must be some kind of like executive at the Kuat shipyards, right?
Yeah.
She's not an Imperial officer at first. She's just a person who's trying to fulfill a customer's need by building a super weapon that destroys planets. But, you know, she's a businesswoman, not a military officer.
Her company got a big military contract. Like, I'm pretty sure that's a cushy job. Like, if you can look past the fact of what you are building, it's a nice job. And, I mean, even if you're working for, like, the Corellian shipyards, you're still making weapons, right? Like, you make the YT-1300, you know, as a freighter, and it's got turrets on it. Like, you put weapons on every ship you make if you're smart. Even a little bit smart. Everything has weapons on it. So, like, even if she was working somewhere else, you would still put weapons on a ship.
Yeah, I mean, there's organizations like the Black Sun and the Huts out there. And even if you're just a regular freighter captain, you're going to need to defend yourself, potentially. It's not because you're trying to fight the Empire or the Rebellion. You just need to do your job. And in space, there's unforeseen things that come up, and maybe you're going to need to shoot at somebody.
Yeah.
But not because you're in the army or...
Yeah, and, well, you know, I really did like, it really, like, came through to me during that meeting, the meeting that Vader held to, like, survey the progress, you know? And it's so funny. Like, Vader kills the guy with the lightsaber, right? And it's one of those things, and then she stands up, and he's like, he's trying to motivate them through sheer intimidation and fear, right? And she stands up, and she says, no, actually, the guy you just killed was right. And at the, you know, cost of my own life, maybe, like, straight up, the metal is the metal, and we can only move it in and build it so fast, and you can intimidate us all you want, but that doesn't change the schedule. Like, I'm sorry, but what we're given, and what we're doing, and who's in charge... It just won't work. Like, you can intimidate and fear all you want because, ooh, you're Darth Vader. But, like, the realistic fact of the matter is that this is like any other construction project. And if you want to fix it, you can't just necessarily throw more money at it. You have to actually put in resources and manpower. You can't intimidate people to work harder when they're already working, like, 20-hour days or whatever the hell it is, you know? And I really like that. Like, that was, like, that's something that would come up in a real meeting.
It's kind of funny that Vader. We see Vader, like, knocked down a peg, because in the movies, and rightfully so, he's, like, a complete badass, you know? He's a scary dude, and he could kill everybody, like, no problem. But she kind of says, like, look, dude, we're all scared. We have to do this job, and you can stab people and choke people and breathe at them all scarily, but, you know... You can't do the impossible, you know. You can't whip us into doing the impossible. So it's really, I thought it was pretty interesting. It's seeing Vader in another light, you know. He's still Vader, and he's still... Well, what's interesting, too, is we kind of see him... There's shadows of Anakin Skywalker, I think, in this version of Vader, because he's very unsure of himself, and, you know, it's very interesting.
Like, what you said there about how she's like, you know, we're people and we're just trying to do this. That was actually one of kind of the best things, where she says, you know, the workers are not your enemies. These contractors are not your enemies. You have real ones that you need to watch out for. And, like, I think part of what makes the Empire seem so one-sidedly evil in the movies is that they're ruthless within their own ranks. So you kind of think, like, who'd want to join this dumb empire? They're just, like, it's a shitty oligarchy.
I had that exact thought when he killed that admiral. I was like, I do not want to be the dude who gets promoted to take that chair. I wouldn't want it.
Exactly. And when she goes, like, hey, we're not meant to be fighting each other, it gives you a sense that maybe this is just, like, a crazy Sith thing, and that the Empire looks out for its own a bit more. And I think you see that in expanded universe stuff and in games a little, but it doesn't come across in the movies, and this illuminates it well, that it's like, hey, maybe some people work for the Empire because it's a cause they actually believe in, because you can't rule more than half a galaxy out of fear. It crumbles eventually. You have to have, like, bigger ideology than that, and this kind of hints at it.
Yeah, the more you tighten your grasp, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. That was the thing, right?
Yeah.
But, like, no, it's so funny. When you mentioned, like, maybe it's just a crazy Sith thing, I was thinking, like, in a big enough company, there's always some manager who's fucking crazy, right? And just does dumb shit for no reason. And, like, everybody else knows who that crazy person is, and none of the other people want to work for that manager, you know? And I think Vader is that manager.
Well, have you guys seen the Robot Chicken sketch where they make fun of that?
No.
It's like in the Death Star conference room where it turns out that Vader can't actually force choke anybody. The officers just play along. And so they pretend to pass out, and then some random soldiers will come and take the body away, and then they'll just put the guy back out onto the, like, into his job with, like, a mustache or something. it's pretty funny. So, like, this, like, a new officer comes in. It's like a briefing for, like, new guys who joined the Death Star crew, and like some Moff is like teaching them how to interact with Vader when he force chokes you.
That's exactly what happens in a workplace. I love that. I love that. But then I like how when the Kuat representative woman, God, I wish I would have written down her name and remembered it. When she convinces Vader to leave, Vader, as he's leaving, says, fine, I'll get the Emperor to come here. And like, he's passing the buck up as he leaves. It's like, it makes me realize, like, dude, you are a really good Sith warrior. You're awesome with the Force. You're not so hot with people, though, are you? Because you're not a good manager.
Well, what's great, too, is she's like, okay, you can call him, but this is what it is.
Yeah. Let him come here, and then he'll see we're doing all we can do with what he's given us, and he can try and intimidate motherfuckers the same way you did, and shit will not speed up. Like, whoop-de-fucking-do, bro.
I think what's great about her is because she's not an Imperial officer, she can say that kind of thing and not be as scared of Vader, I guess. I mean, he could still stab her,
yeah,
or force choke her or whatever, but she is the one that kind of steps up. Because if you think back to the beginning of Return of the Jedi, when Vader arrives on the second Death Star, he tells whoever the Moff in charge is that the Emperor is coming, and he, like, shits his pants.
Yeah.
But this, and then when Vader first arrives too, there's another guy who's like trying to explain the situation to Vader, and Vader comments on how he looks nervous. But she like is not, she's operating in it from a different angle than the Imperial officers, so she's able to like, you know, she doesn't react to him in the same way that everybody else does.
Yeah, yeah, she came to work with her depends on for sure. She shits her pants, who gives a fuck? I'm ready. So, okay, we talked about the Imperials a lot. I also really liked how they fleshed out and explored the Rebellion's sort of command structure. Because the first, like, I also really liked that you saw the Mon Calamari cruisers, like Home One and stuff, because you don't see that in the movies until Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And this is set before Empire. So there's this sense that, like, it's not, when you see all those capital ships in Return of the Jedi, it isn't out of nowhere. Like, they've had these ships out there flying around. They just haven't had a place to, like, sit them and have them be there, you know? Like, you don't want your entire... Like, I'm assuming they eventually find Hoth and decide to go with Hoth. But even once you do that, I wouldn't want the fleet there. Because then if the Empire finds the planet, not only have they killed all of our ground forces, but they defeated our fleet. And then we're just fucked.
And that's the case. That is the case, right? I mean, they just have a bunch of transports and fighters, but they don't have, like, you know, there's no capital ships. Probably for the exact reason that you mentioned.
Yeah, and then at the end of that movie, they rendezvous with the fleet somewhere else. So the fleet's obviously, it's there, it exists, it's just not near them. So I really like that, like, this kind of shows that those pieces of the Rebellion that you don't get in the movie, you know? Like, in the movie, Mon Mothma is just this woman who shows up and gives a bunch of orders. And you're like, wait, I thought Leia was the leader here. Because in Jedi, Mon Mothma stands up and she says, this is our battle plan. But, like, if you watch 4 and 5, like, Leia's the one giving orders to all the troops. She's the one calling the shots. So, like, I remember watching Jedi and being like, who the fuck is this woman? And what does this do with the fish eyes? Why the fuck are they in charge? I had no idea where that came from.
And it's cool because in this, too, Ackbar's not the Admiral yet. He's Commander Ackbar. Yeah.
That was really cool.
And no, like, I think I do like this a lot. I like this for the same reasons you're mentioning, Andy, because we get to see all these little details that I'm sure that they would have loved to include in the movie, but because movies can't be 6 hours long or whatever. I mean, they could be, but no one's going to watch it.
I would.
Well, I would too. But
I would want a 6 hour long Star Wars movie in a heartbeat.
But you know what I mean? Like, people don't want to sit. They can't. Yeah, they have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah. One of my favorite things actually about it's such a small little scene with Ackbar when he tries to call the fire team to take down the X-Wings who launched without authorization, and Mon Mothma comes up and stops him and says, strike it from this, strike it from that. And like, you really get a good sense of how they are building trust between each other. And it's that interaction is like the mirror opposite of the Imperial interactions, you know? So like, there's a lot of times when Mothma, and I think even Ackbar mentions it, like, are we becoming the Empire? Like, is this secrecy, security, you know, like doubting our own people? That's an Imperial thing. Are we becoming the enemy? Like, they have that concern. And I think just having the concern and being able to talk about it and being able to openly discuss the trust that they have with each other, that is what makes them different. The things that they're doing, yeah, those are things that Imperials would do, but that's not why they're doing it. It's so awesome to see that mirror difference and show you why this works and that doesn't. I really like that scene.
Mm-hmm. I kind of caught me by surprise that Leia was, like, piloting an X-Wing. Because I don't think we ever get a sense that she's a competent pilot. Not that she's in this. I'm not saying that she's
incompetent.
Well, yeah, but we never get any notion that she has piloting experience in the movies.
Yeah.
So that just kind of surprised me. Like, once I got past, like, the first couple issues, like, it wasn't. I mean, well, it was never an issue for me that she was flying a plane. Like, ladies can't fly starfighters kind of thing. But it's just like we never saw her in that kind of. In that role. And then I think somebody mentions it later in the comic about how she shouldn't be.
Some douchebag, like, deckhand.
Oh, yeah. He's like, you're never going to be one of us.
Well, not, like, not that part. I mean, I feel like I read something later where they were saying that because of her role in the Rebellion, she shouldn't be putting herself out there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mon Mothma said that,
I
right?
Think, or Wedge says it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, when she's stranded out there, I think.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, say, we need to get out of here. Doesn't matter. We need you to sail. Yeah, yeah, it's that part.
Okay.
Where after they...
like, you're important. Damn the security, whatever.
Yeah.
We got to get you back.
And so maybe that's why we never see her in those kinds of roles. I mean, we know she's not a pushover because even in A New Hope, we see her, you know, she blows out the garbage chute and pushes everybody down into the garbage compactor.
Yeah, if she sees an opportunity, she'll grab the gun and take charge. You don't got to worry about her. She will fucking do it.
But, yeah, I mean, it just kind of surprised me. It's like, oh, Leia's flying out.
Well, yeah, it did me too. And at first I was like, I don't know, maybe it was because I had a slower buy-in. At first I bought in like, okay, she's a leader. Maybe she's on the squad and maybe she's leading up Grey Flight. Because she's an awesome leader. Like, that is her thing. She's a great leader. She's inspirational. She'll take on the burden. She's awesome at it. But then, like, you see her, like, flying with them, and she, like, comes up with awesome fighting ideas, and she's, like, leading the tactics and stuff, and I'm like, but, like, Wedge is a great pilot. Shouldn't it be Wedge? But Wedge has her wing. I don't know. But maybe I just wrote it off, too, because of the slow buy-in like that. I don't know.
Well, then it's like, you know, with comics, there's a certain amount of, you know, suspension of disbelief. So it's like, okay, that's fine. I mean, she, if you think about it, it makes sense that she would probably be maybe adept, maybe like it runs in her family. Luke is a good fighter pilot. Vader was a great pilot. Maybe it's some level of force sensitivity that she doesn't know at this point in the story, allows her to be a pretty adept pilot, you know?
Yeah, I'd buy that. That sounds reasonable to me. So what did you guys think of some of these other pilots? Because they have that very, like, television kind of thing where they put everybody in a room and introduce them all. But, like, after that scene, they kind of do kind of flesh out the characters a little bit more of each of them. Did you guys attach to any of these or hate any of these? Did they flesh them out enough for you to get interested in any of these pilots at all?
I would say that they didn't really flesh out anyone except for Tess, and she was cool. I really did like her a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
Preeti a little bit.
But she would, there was, it seemed like her role was less being, like, a pilot and more being a love interest rival.
Yeah, which, if you'd have just come two movies later.
Yeah,
it's like now knowing what we know,
yeah,
having seen the other movies, it's kind of like fun. It's kind of funny, but
her and Han Solo need to have a drink together. But I really did think she was interesting, like the whole thing with the adepts and all that kind of stuff, how like they meditate on the balance of nature and all that kind of stuff, and the force is one of those parts of nature that they study, so like she's kind of like force sensitive, and there's a reason for it and a way for it and everything, but she, like, I don't know, I did think she was pretty interesting. Of course, my favorite pilot was the Twi'lek.
Of course,
because
I knew that we were going to talk about that.
what was the other ones?
Well, there's the Trandoshan.
Actually, he's Sorin.
What's the difference between Trandoshans and Sorins? I didn't know that there were there was, I'm looking him up on Wikipedia, or on Wikipedia now, so now I see that you are correct.
Yeah, they're different planet. Trandoshans are like a hunter society, so that's why Bosk is a bounty hunter. Like,
well, Trandoshans, well, I mean, I know about Trandoshans. I just don't know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to insult you, bro.
Well, Trandoshans are from, aren't they from the moon, like one of Kashyyyk's moons? Oh, okay. According to Wikipedia, the Sorin are a Trandoshan subspecies.
Ah, okay.
Well, there we go. We were both right. And yes. Both wrong. yeah, Tess is...
Well, what, I saw the show notes where it says Sorin, and I was like, which fucking noob wrote that? And then I guess I was wrong.
yeah, Tess is Graham Cortes, the other Alderaanian dude. I don't know. I didn't really get anything for him. The Sorin was like, hey, there's the token alien. Cool. Well, I guess Twi'leks are aliens too. I don't know. Follow that Kord, the guy that like felt like he should have been an Imperial.
Maybe he's an ancestor of Ted Kord.
Oh yeah. Dude, I love all the Kord drops in Arrow. I love it everywhere. That's just mentioning Kord.
Oh yeah. So like, quick aside. Listeners, yeah. Andy is now watching Arrow, and I get text messages from him all the time when he discovers something fun in the show.
I just like
I got one today that about Dr. Ivo and his ship, and then the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's Amazo. I love the ship name.
Anyway,
like, why is nothing here called Amazo? You have Ivo, but no Amazo. Okay, no, but see, okay. My theory. Let me hear you. My theory is that there's not an actual spy. My theory is that it's a droid.
Hmm.
It's a droid and it's software. Because
see, here's the thing with I feel like droids kind of they just can't do bad things.
Dude, you know better than that.
Yeah, that's not true at all.
Well, I mean, there's... they can be assholes, but I think if, like, droids... If somebody tells a droid, like, to do something, like a human, or not a human, but like a living person who's, like, in charge, the droids kind of have to do it. I don't know, there's,
yeah.
Like, conflicting things.
There is conflicting. I mean, there's... I remember reading somewhere, like, a droid will always do what you tell it. It will always be honest, but it, like...
I think that was in
that
the
was
Star Wars.
That was in last week? I don't
yeah.
know.
So maybe that's where I'm getting
that kind of, from. There's that kind of thing which makes sense, but then I remember in Clone Wars in the first season, Grievous has a R2 unit that infiltrates Anakin Skywalker's squad and becomes Ahsoka's droid.
Yeah.
And starts fucking things up. Like, it's a sabotaging droid, you know? So, like, I believe that. I believe that's not too hard to do. You could program a droid to be a saboteur.
Yeah.
Especially one that doesn't talk, right? So then you just have to have it not communicate with, like, a protocol droid or something that would communicate then also to the humans that this astromech is a fucking dickbag traitor.
Well, I think we can say, I think there's pretty strong, you know, we could say that R2-T4 is not the spy.
No, I really love...
He's a bro.
Dude, yes.
Well, not a bro.
That.
Not a bro, like a...
He's Leia's bro.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
Yeah, I love that. Because it shows that, like, it's not just that they think independently or anything. There's, like, it justifies me as a kid putting some kind of humanity or spark of personality into R2-D2. Like, R2-D2, when you're a kid and when you're watching the movies, you want it to have a personality. But it doesn't really. Like, if you go back and look at it analytically... Like 4, 5, and 6. I mean, it kind of has personality, but it could just be like survival program, whatever. But like R2-T4 clearly is a bro. Like, there's a little bit of personality. It's not just AI. Like, it makes a decision to do something over private lines, to save her when she doesn't ask, like to do all of this stuff for her without her even having to ask or say it.
Well, have you heard the theory that R5-D4, the red astromech from that has a bad motivator in A New Hope? That leads the Owen Lars to buy R2.
That he popped his motivator on purpose?
Yeah, that he's, like, force sensitive.
I have not
heard that. I've heard
That's
that
bullshit.
One.
It's
yeah, that he's...
Droid.
The reason he does it is because he's force sensitive, and he knows that R2 has to go with Luke.
Yeah, that's conspiracy theory right there.
No, R2 could have just told him, hey, hook me up, hook a brother up.
But wouldn't like, you could think have just that the red dude other. Would have been like, dude, I don't want to stick around with these fucking Jawas.
Yeah...
But yeah, I don't remember where I heard that, but there's that's like a rumor a that he's force sensitive. But no, I think there's a strong argument that the droids have a personality. They're not just automata. I mean, they are automata, but they're not like all the same. I mean, look at 3PO. He has a massive personality.
He's a little bitch.
And a huge ego. He has a huge ego.
Yeah. He reminds me of the Doctor in Voyager.
Even just like, we don't even hear R2 say anything, but just from based on 3PO's reactions to the beeps, we know that R2 is like a huge asshole, or how he interacts with
R2's hella sassy.
The way he interacts with Yoda when they first meet on Dagobah.
Yeah, zaps him.
Well, and then they're like arguing over like the flashlight, right? R2 won't give him the flashlight. So yeah, the droids for sure are they're not just robots.
Yeah, and I like that we get new ones that have their own different kind of personality too. It's funny, the more and more I talk about this comic, the more I realize what I like is all of the ways that fleshes out and further confirms all the things that I felt already about this universe, and all the things that I already liked. It's like, yeah, of course the droids have personality. Here's another R2 unit, completely different from R2-D2, who is also hella cool, by the way.
Well, what's awesome, too, is, like, I think you could... a person could certainly like write it off as like fan service, but it's so much more than fan service because it all feels organic, you know. It doesn't feel like they just, you know, Leia got her flight suit blown off so we could see her boobies or something like that, you know. I don't know, that was the movie, that was a bad example, but that's what I think of when people say fan service.
Fan service has that negative connotation of doing pointless things just to make fans happy, but yeah. I don't feel like any of this is pointless. It all leads towards the main plot, ties things in, and does, like, it flavors the universe in ways that we don't get from other sources. So, like, that's why it's better, right? Feels like it's not superfluous.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that stuff, like, I really think... So, I know Vader kills people in this, and that's all great, but I don't think he's the villain of this book. There's a clear, singular person who is a villain in this book, and it is fucking Bircher.
Yeah.
He is the antagonist, but see, the thing is, like, you know, Star Wars, because there's Jedi and Sith, there's, like, this clear line of good and evil. Maybe it's not that clear, but in the movies, that's what the direction they're pointing you as the viewer. But I feel like Bircher, I mean, he's bad because he's trying to catch the heroes, but he's like just trying to do the job that the Emperor set him out to do.
I don't know. I think he's trying to do more than that. I think he honestly wants to supplant Vader.
Sure, but that's like.
I mean, you and I know that that's impossible, but he doesn't. He thinks he can do it, and that just makes him a fucking tool and a pain in Vader's ass. So, like, even if you're sympathizing with Vader and Vader's quest to find his son, which I think is what we're going to get into in this comic if you keep reading it, like, even if you sympathize with that, Bircher's the villain for Vader, and Bircher's the villain for Luke and Leia. Like, he's the antagonist for everybody.
Yeah, definitely.
But I get what you mean. Like, he's trying to do his job the best he can so that he can rise through the ranks and gain esteem and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. It's so interesting because we get the one side, right, where all of the admirals are afraid of the Emperor and his apprentice, right? Like, there's this immediate fear of your boss. But so there's, like, the I don't want to get promoted. But then there's the people who, like, you have to have a certain personality to get there in the first place. To actually want to be in that position to be able to be afraid of them. Like, in my mind, having a character like Bircher rationalizes the death of all those other motherfuckers. Because all of them have to have a little bit of Bircher in them. A little bit of the guy who will walk up, run his finger across a random stormtrooper helmet, not get any dust, and still say, we can do better. Like, you're a fucking tool, dude. You're a fucking tool. There's a little bit of that in, like, all of these admirals. And so I don't feel bad when they die anymore. I do not feel bad when Vader kills them.
For sure.
And thank you, Bircher, for letting me get there.
I feel like, going out of the comic a little bit, there are certainly some officers that I don't feel that way about. Like, General Veers from Empire Strikes Back. I always kind of like that guy. And then,
You do, because he uses snowtroopers.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's like a, I mean, sure, he wants to kill the rebels and blow up their base, but...
Who doesn't?
Yeah. And I can't think of his name. I feel such an idiot now. Yeah, Piet.
Oh, how did I pull that name out? I got the right one.
Well, it is Piet, the one who, because he's like around a lot. He becomes kind of Vader's right hand man, right? You know, he takes over the Imperial fleet.
Yeah, he gets promoted via force stroking.
Yeah, and then he's in charge still when Jedi rolls around, you know. I mean, he dies because he gets hit in the face by an A-Wing, which is the coolest way to kill a bad guy, I think. But, yeah, I think some of the, you know, some of the officers are really, are cool dudes.
Yeah, but,
not Tarkin, because I feel like, you know how, like, you know how Leia says she recognizes Tarkin's foul stench when she was brought aboard? In my mind, like, since I was a kid, I always felt like he smelled like old man.
Oh, God,
he didn't smell
too.
Like, he didn't smell like poop or something.
But
he
like
just
mothballs.
Smelled like an old man.
Ew.
Like he's an old guy. Like, what's that? I don't know, like that. I can't think of what that thing is, but the, like some kind of like old people medicine smell plus like bad cologne.
Yeah.
Or like aftershave.
Yeah.
That's what my wife is working like every time. Yeah, he just exactly. smells like an yeah. old guy, like a nursing home or something.
Like weirdly musty.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
So, well, Andy, have you got to the part in the Clone Wars cartoon with Tarkin yet?
No, not yet. I don't even know what just happened.
Well, so he comes in later, and he's supposed to be younger, but he still looks like an old man.
All I know is I want more Cad Bane. That guy is fucking sick.
Yeah, you'll see him.
I should just skip like most of season one and just sing Cad Bane, and then I would have been all in.
Well, the tough thing about Cad Bane is there's like that baby hut.
Oh yeah, he's I don't know. This is totally different. This is tangential.
Yeah, well, we're still talking about Star Wars. But anyways, yes.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Rebellion era, not the Clone Wars.
Okay, so we talked about Leia a bit. We talked about Grey Flight. What do you guys think of Han and Chewie in this? Are they even remarkable, or are they just like one of those small story threads that's kind of building up?
Well, what I kind of liked about this portrayal of them is that you can see Han is still kind of on the fence about whether to be part of the Rebellion or not.
Hmm.
But Chewie's like, dude, come on. Let's do the right thing.
And I think Chewie's in that position, in my head, Chewie's more saying, like, now they're depending on us. Like, we could have gotten out before, but you flew back, and now they're depending on us. So, dude, come on. We gotta follow through now. Like, we'll do this, and then we can go. But, like, because Chewie's only with Han out of a life debt, right?
Yeah.
He's with Han out of a sense of duty and responsibility. And so we know Chewie kind of has that in him, but then, like, he's trying to, like, I imagine he feels the same way with the Rebellion now. It's like, we're committed right now, bro. We are in this. Sure. And Han is still like, well, this is a really nice bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty funny.
We just leave with the whiskey and then I'd be happy. We could just go right now.
Yeah, he's like, I could sell the Falcon and still not be able to buy this. Oh, dude, that part where they're, like, escaping into Coruscant, and Han's like, dude, what are you doing? And Chewbacca, like, pops out of the roof hatch and starts shooting at people.
Oh, that was sick.
I was like, dude, Chewie, you are the man. What a badass.
Dude, at first I thought he was going to one of the turrets, and then his head pops up.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, fucking baller. I don't need no goddamn turret. I got my gun. I'm also really interested in Han getting off of Coruscant in the like quasi corrupt garbage waste woman.
Yeah.
Because this is one of those things I never would have thought about. It's a whole planet made up of city. Where the hell does the waste go? They have to ship it off world. Okay. So I'm really interested to see what happens there. Because, like, they've made her interesting enough that you think she doesn't quite, like, have it in. Like, she's another one of those roguish characters like Han. Not doing the good thing because it's good, but doing the good thing because that's where the money is right now. And what else are you going to do?
For sure.
All right, so, going down the list, Bertrand Vader, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we're talking about most of the characters. What did you guys think of the whole finding a new home story-moving thing?
I mean, it makes sense if it's acting as filler between the two movies, because...
Well, there's even... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I didn't have anything. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, like, one thing that, if you are familiar with the EU, that we know happens is that even after the Death Star gets destroyed, the Empire still, like, invades Yavin 4, because they know that the Rebels are there. And so there's, like, this big thing where they have to escape. And so this is kind of the ramifications of that, but before they find Hoth. So it's just, I think it was a cool story, and I mean, it makes sense in the timeline that the movies set up. I haven't read this comic before, so this is the most of it that I've read, but I'm definitely going to get more of them, because I want to know what happens as they get towards Hoth, because I imagine that's about where this comic's story will end. Well, maybe not, because of the whole move to Marvel, but that's the logical conclusion.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
See, I don't know. While I was reading this, I was thinking it would make almost more sense to stay just as a fleet, and maybe even split the fleet up into two or three smaller fleets. Because right now, they're just super vulnerable to attack as they are. And just putting down on land, I know that kind of offloads and creates space in the fleet, but then you're just fucking letting them sit there. And this is probably me saying hindsight's 20/20. Like, you don't put your shit down on Hoth. Don't do it, bro. Like, it's easy to say now, but I mean, as I was reading it, I was thinking, like when I was watching Battlestar Galactica, I never thought stopping and landing on a planet would have been a good idea. And here, I'm also thinking, stopping and landing on a planet is not a good idea. Stay mobile. You are a tiny little rebellion, and the Empire is massive.
I actually thought of BSG, too, and I was like, kind of weird that they're not just holding a fleet in space and using that as a moving base of operations.
Yeah, like, that makes more sense to me. And maybe that's, I don't know, that might be hindsight 2020 kind of thing, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, they never watched BSG, so.
Dude, but David, you were talking about, like, what happened after the movie with Yavin, and I thought about, like, have you heard of, what is it, the devastation of Endor, or the irradiation of Endor?
Mm-mm.
The idea that after they had the celebration with the Ewoks, and then the Rebels left, all of the debris from the Death Star spiraled down onto the planet, and just all of the radiation from all of the lasers and stuff, and all of the metal in the Death Star just completely devastated the entire planet and killed, like, all life there, and almost all of the Ewoks are dead.
Is that something... who's really sad about the Ewoks dying?
Wait, did that happen in the EU? Or...
That is old EU canon, that Endor is fucked.
Well, no, I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah,
because they blew up the Death Star, and it was right there, and it was in really super close orbit, too.
Well, I mean, there's just, like, even if there's not radiation, just this stuff falling, I mean... There's a lot of vegetation that's going to just catch on fire.
Yeah.
So the Ewoks, yeah, they're definitely fucked.
They were hella fucked.
That's grimdark.
The first time I read that, it blew my mind. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect fucking sense. Oh, that... Now when I watch that celebration at the end when they're all singing, and I'm like, oh, this is super morbid now. Where they're, like, all singing happy and using the Stormtrooper helmets as drums. I was like, oh... Oh, do it now before you die. So what was your guys' favorite scene in this comic?
That's a good question. Basically, it's the panel where Boba Fett shows up. Just kidding.
Fine, that's your favorite. My favorite is the ones with the Twi'lek.
Boba Fett was my favorite character in this, even though all he said was Bosk.
Yes.
I think that's all he said.
He one word.
He says the name of a different bounty hunter. No, I actually like the part where... I mean, there's a lot of little panels. Like the part where Vader's in his meditation chamber, where he has his helmet off, and he's, like, mulling over... He's thinking about Luke, but he doesn't know it's Luke yet, right? I think that's actually kind of going back to Vader's character. One of the things I liked about this, and these three panels highlight it for me, is Vader is really confused. I get the notion. He's really confused about this other Skywalker. I don't think he realizes that it's his son.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Because as far as he knows, Padme died before giving birth, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's just really confused about that there is another Skywalker out there. And it's like really like throwing him off his Sith game.
Like in my head, I imagine he was there in the trench. He felt how powerful Luke was in the Force. He felt it. Like, and he mentions it in the movie. And then the defeat comes down. And so I imagine he recovers, and now he's like kind of he's meditating and stretching out into the Force the same way he was taught to do when he was a Jedi, and trying to find out who the fuck that was. Because there shouldn't be anybody alive that's that powerful anymore. They should all be dead. So the fact that a guy like that even exists is a threat to the Empire. So it's already, Vader should be doing this just to figure out who the fuck that is. And then as he reaches out, he's like, Skywalker. And then it, like, mind blown. And that's why he's just like, yeah, I got more important shit to do. You're right. When somebody wrote her name in the notes, Bira Seya. Thank you for that. Like, that's when he was like, you're right. I do have more important shit to do. I got to find this person apparently named Skywalker. What the fuck, Skywalker? Like,
That's my name.
But like, that was really cool, cuz it turned into something that was a duty to something that was personal. Mm-hmm. And that was a neat twist to then see how he changed in the way that he was acting too. Because when it was just work, he didn't prioritize it. But once he got the name, he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get the fuck out of here now. I got more important shit.
Well, another thing too is like it becomes a Sith situation and not an Imperial thing.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. Oh, I love that stuff about like Vader behind the mask. Because when you watch the movies and when I was growing up, Vader was just this sense of doom behind a mask, you know? It's not until like the very like final 10 minutes of the movie really that you realize there's actually a person under there. It's doom and terror encased in a hard metal shell. And the extended universe stuff set in between the movies, it just does such a good job of like making you realize the person in there, and not just the person in there, but the motivations for still doing the terrible things. Like, you can humanize him all you want, but he still does terrible shit after you humanize him. So you have to you have to find the middle ground between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always really interesting to see how different writers do that.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like the Dark Times comic series, which takes place like immediately after the Clone Wars ends, and Vader is like, you know, he's now newly put in the suit, and like he is, you know, he looks like Vader, but he's more like Anakin underneath the armor, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know what's going on. He's still torn up by Padme and all that stuff. And he's really unsure of himself. And we get we get shades of that in this comic. So it makes it really interesting because, like, he's this, like you said, Andy, he's just like this sense, he's this image of impending doom in the movies. But that's, you know, it's not really clear visually that he is a person and not a droid, because we see these droids and they're shiny and stuff just like he is. I mean, he's black, but his costume is black, but he's shiny, you know? And so I think it's really interesting that we get his internal monologue in the comic, because they can't really do that in the movie, because
no.
Star Wars doesn't have a voiceover narration. And I think it would be weird if there was, like, in retrospect. But the comics does a great job of giving us, we get to see Vader's thoughts. Because he probably has to put on a facade to be, you know, because he's kind of we get the notion from the movies, especially in A New Hope, that Vader, like, is the boss.
Yeah.
Like, he's in charge of everything, and that's certainly not the case. At least, I mean, immediately at the beginning of the movie, he seems like that, but, I mean, Tarkin comes along, and then it's kind of, even then, I don't think, to me, watching the movies as a kid, it's not clear that Tarkin is Vader's boss. It's like they're peers.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that Tarkin does outrank Vader, at least from a military imperial hierarchy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Vader's the Darth Sidious' apprentice, but nobody knows about Darth Sidious anymore. He's just the Emperor now.
Oh, that's just all awesome, too, how that change happens. See, and I also, like, speaking of the Emperor, I also really like how you get that one side of Vader, but then you get the other side of what's happening with him, because now it's been a while since Padme died. Mm-hmm. Vader's anger and rage and self-loathing is starting to heal, right? Or at least a little bit. You kind of get that sense, like, he's moving on kind of someone. He's settling into the role of who he is. And as the Emperor, that's dangerous. That's not as easy to manipulate, and it doesn't make him as powerful. When he's pulling out of that giant pocket of rage and self-hatred, it's so much easier to manipulate him and make him your pawn. So it's really also then interesting. I love the way they showed that scene with him and the Emperor, and Emperor twisting him still.
Yeah.
Like, just making him hate himself out of shame. had the shitty job he did. And it's like, there's fucking nothing you could have done, man. He did everything he could. He did. And nobody can fault Vader for the loss of the first Death Star. Nobody really could. That was all fucking Tarkin. But the Emperor still manages to pin it all on Vader and make Vader feel like utter shit for it. And it's just like, you get the sense that the Emperor is always finding just new needles to stab into Vader. Just new little things to jab at him with.
Twist the knife a little bit more.
Yeah, and it's just like, ah, oh, that existence sucks. Like, that just blows all around. That was a really good scene. Jen, did you have a favorite scene?
I did. It's actually, I think, only in the trade. Did you guys read the individual issues or the...
Yeah, I read the singles.
Yeah, okay. I got the singles from the Dark Horse Digital.
So, in the trade, they also include a comic from Free Comics Book Day.
Ah.
And it features Vader. And basically, it's an assassination attempt on him when Boba Fett, like, comes to visit him. So, someone tries to vent Vader out of an airlock. And what he basically does is push a button on his suit so that he can not suffocate in space. He climbs out the outside of a fucking Imperial Star Destroyer, clambers up to the command deck, like, just climbs, busts through the window, and murders everybody in the room to be like, you don't fuck with me. And this scene where he just busts through the window is amazing. Maybe it's on the Dark Horse site, but if you ever get your hands on the actual trade, take a look at it. It's just like this short little mini issue, and it is so epic. So, I don't know, that's kind of a cheat because it wasn't in the six issues that we officially read for the podcast. I would say the scene where Chewbacca is shooting the bowcaster out of the roof of the Falcon.
Yeah,
that was excellent.
For sure.
That sounds great. That's the other time you love Vader. I really like the humanizing stuff, but I really like the stuff when Vader's just being a complete fucking baller. Because nobody else can do the shit that he does and make it look as cool. Like, have you guys played The Force Unleashed, the first one?
Yes.
Yes.
When you do the first level as Vader, subjugating Kashyyyk, and you just walk around with, like, unlimited force power, just murdering the fuck out of everything, just force choking motherfuckers and throwing them off the bridge. Oh my god.
It's like impossible to not beat that level.
Dude, I have never felt like more of a badass in any video game than that level of that. It's just like you're just walking around just fucking doing whatever the hell you want. It's like, oh my god, this is awesome. There's a couple other... Purge is a really good comic too. It's about Vader going and killing the last straggling Jedis who survived the Order 66. And it's just like, oh... Yeah, you really were a fucking badass, weren't you? Oh, man. Well, what about the art? Let's do the art, and we'll wrap things up. What did you guys think about this?
It was good. I liked it a lot better than last week's art. I felt like the style fit better for the universe. And it was actually kind of interesting because they got Leia pretty well, I would say. But Luke looked nothing like Mark Hamill to me.
Yeah.
I didn't see it in the face. Maybe the hairstyle, but also he was blonder.
Definitely the hairstyle.
Yeah. It's just, it didn't bother me at all. It still felt like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, he's still whiny. Either way, he's still whiny. He still looks whiny. Yeah, there was only one thing that kind of got me about the art in this, and it was the transitions from panel to panel. Sometimes it felt were kind of jarring on occasion, but that's when I realized it's because, like, it's not, I was like, did I miss something? Where the fuck did these Star Destroyers come from? And then I had to realize, like, oh, they came out of fucking nowhere. Oh, okay. Like, I don't know, there needed to be some little cue that they just appeared, and then I hadn't, like, skipped a page on accident. Because as soon as I realized that they appeared out of fucking nowhere, then I got a real sense of immediacy, but it took, like, it's kind of contradictory to take a second to get a sense of immediacy. It kind of didn't work, but other than that, it was all great. Like, the ships looked awesome. There was tons of detail on all of the ships.
Oh, I loved the TIE Interceptors. Yeah. I thought they looked so good.
Oh, man.
They had a great two-page spread where you see the Star Destroyer and the second Death Star.
Yeah.
That was, like, all the detail there was just gorgeous. I love that one.
Oh, God, it's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
I guess if I had one... I mean, I liked the art, no doubt. I think if I had one complaint, and it's not... I don't think it's really the art's fault, but when... towards the end, when it was Wedge, Tess, and Leia...
Oh, you kind of
wasn't
Tess
sure
and Leia
if it was
confused.
Tess or Leia.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. like as I progressed through the book, I realized that their helmets were slightly different. They had different markings on their helmets.
Yeah, one was blue, one was orange, and one was
And then
red.
You could see Tess's hair sometimes. And I mean that's they're in military uniforms, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's just it's not the fault of the art.
Yeah.
Or the artist, so.
No, and by that point, I was willing to forgive any like little thing that kind of irked me. I bought into this art style super early when Leia crash landed on that first planet, and then the other ship crash landed past her. And there's not really any words on those pages. You just get the sense of she gets out, you get that look of oh fuck, grabs her guns and heads that direction, and like just the whole thing. There's no words. There's just like there's a little bit of like sound effect text, but that's it. And it's just the whole interaction happens wordlessly and it works really, really well. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. I'm down with this. This is good shit. Anyway, you guys got anything else or should we rate?
I'm ready to rate.
Let's rate it.
All right. Jen, you go first.
I'm going to give it a 4. I really enjoyed reading it, and I want to read more. I was really, really engaged in the spy plot the whole time, and I don't have any idea who it could be at this point.
Totally.
So, yeah, I really, really like when there's a mystery that I can't just solve on my own. And the only thing that could ruin that is if it's, like, completely out of left field. But if they've been building it up and it's someone that we've been seeing the whole time, that will be a great resolution. So... It was really engaging. I'm going to read more of it.
Yeah, and they do kind of push you in certain directions, too. Like, they do kind of push you to think it might be Fallback because he's kind of Imperial-ish. They kind of push you to thinking it might be Preeti. I don't know. That was really cool. David, you go next.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a 4. I really liked this. I mean, I liked last week's, but I think it was more because it's like, hey, look at this fun Star Wars thing. And I like this one because, you know, I love Star Wars. But this was a great story. Like, I think that there. What's great about this is this one was definitely set up to be, like, I feel like a trade. You know, it was written with trade paperbacks in mind. But I think that there was... the story is great because it kind of... there's some resolution at the end of 6 issues. But there's enough stuff left that it makes me want to go out and get the next trade, read the following issues. And so you know, and the art was good, the nuance that it adds to very familiar characters I think was great, especially Vader. You know, he was like one of the standout characters for me in this comic, so I don't really have anything bad to say about it. I think it was great, so 4 for sure.
So I was gonna give this a 4 too. Not 4.2, but I was also going to give this a 4. And then I remember that I gave Dazzler a 4, and I really like this a lot more than Dazzler. So I'm going to give it a 4.5. you know, I'm also really interested in the... I'm giving it a high rating for the same reasons you guys are. Like, it's Star Wars, and Star Wars is great, and this is a really good mystery, actually. And there's a turn right before the end where she realizes it's like... she didn't even tell anybody. Like, it's not even... like, before the leak even got out, they already knew she was going to be there. So this whole, like, thing she was doing to plant, a false trail doesn't even matter. Because whoever she picked, like, whoever the spy is, it's either somebody she picked or they're getting their information some other way. Like, even that's not, like, it, in the very end, turned that on its head. But what I really like is what I said right at the beginning. All the little stuff that makes this fake world feel more tangible. All those little details of, like, that saying that you thought was just a Han Solo thing is actually a Corellian thing, and they joke about it, and it's like a thing between them, and it's like all that, those little things, those little, like, things that just make you think that make you think this might be real. Which, you know, it's not, but I don't know. Just,
well, I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
It was a galaxy
very far away.
Yeah, it'll be a long time before we can confirm or deny.
I mean, if there are infinite dimensions of existence, this has to be real somewhere. That's just a logical conclusion based on a fallacy. 4.5 easily. It's really fun to read, and it's it's Star Wars, and it nails being Star Wars. There's no character in this that makes me go, oh, that's like Jar Jar who I didn't like, or that's like this one. This is just, this is Star Wars in exactly the way that I always wanted Star Wars to be.
Mm-hmm.
So 4.5 for nailing that feel, too. Anyway, that wraps it up for this week. Next week, we're going to finish our Farewell to Dark Horse's Star Wars license by reading something out of the Star Wars Boba Fett Omnibus. These Star Wars Omnibuses are really awesome. They're great size, good paper, and affordable. And if you can, I would say go ahead and buy the Boba Fett Omnibus. It's probably like $15 for like over
cover,
1,000 pages.
Cover price is $25.
Yeah,
but
you can...
It's 500 pages. But it's not like the Marvel Omnibus, like Andy was saying. It's like really nice paper, and it's full color. And what's cool about it, too, is it's like this tour of Boba Fett in the comics, because there's all different art styles and all different parts in Boba Fett's career, different parts in the Star Wars storyline. It's really good.
I mean, this is honestly one of the things I'm really sad to see go from the Star Wars franchise, is these omnibuses are great, and Dark Horse has always done a really good job of making these, like, big collections. So I hope Marvel does half as good a job. But anyway, we're going to read a selection out of the omnibus. We're not going to read the whole 500 pages. We're going to read the five issues that are called Underworld, the Yavin Basilica, written by Mike Kennedy. It's a five-issue mini, so if you really want to go get the singles, you can. Underworld, the Yavin Basilica. Basilica. I don't know what the fuck that word means. And if you don't want to go look it up, just go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. Click on that. It'll have a link to what we're reading. I'll see if I can find a trade of just this, but it will definitely at least link to the Omni. If you have a suggestion for what we should read coming up, send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
We are also on all the social media stuff, twitter.com/apsupercast, facebook.com/apsupercast, and apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah! Alright, everybody. Until next time. Goodbye!
Goodbye.
May the Force be with you.
Yeah! I was going to say that if you didn't.